Good evening. It is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by your CFRC News Collective, Ara McCauley, Jesse Bell, and Jenny Hinch. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and for our podcasts, Smith Engineering at Queen's University. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Ara McCauley, and here are your local news headlines. The City of Kingston has taken a page from the free community libraries peppered throughout the city by installing three community food pantries as part of a pilot project to increase options for low-barrier food access. Like their library counterparts, these food pantries, located on Days Road, Clergy Street, and West Campus, provide space for individuals to leave or take fresh produce and non-perishable foods, no questions asked. The model supplements contributions of food from community donations with local produce grown through the Kingston Community Garden Network. The pantries operate on a take-what-you-need, leave-what-you-can approach and aim to improve access to food, reduce stigma, and fill gaps left by traditional food programs which can have limits on use or require proof of income. The program is one of the components of the city's food framework, which City Council approved in May 2025. The community pantries were funded as part of an approved total of $300,000 allocated for food programming, focusing on four pillars: meal provision, food access, small capital improvements, and innovative projects. Each pantry will be managed by a different community partner, including Bloom Skills Center, Queen's University, and the Mess Studio. Each pantry has been allocated $5,000 to cover the cost of materials and initial food purchases, and the goal is to supplement inventory through community donations and community garden surplus. Donations are accepted at all community pantry locations on an ongoing basis. While the pantry located on Queen's West Campus is limited to Queen's students experiencing food insecurity, public pantries are available at Bloom Skills Center via Lakeside Community Gardens at 100 Days Road and the Mess Studio at St. Andrew's Church, 130 Clergy Street East. CFRC spoke to Amber Potter, Executive Director of Bloom Skills Center, and Sandy Dodds, Executive Director of the Mess Studio, about their involvement in the pantry program. The first guest I'm speaking to today is Sandy Dodds, Executive Director of the Mess Studio.
Why did your organization specifically want to get involved with this food access program?
Well, we've been running for almost 17 years now, and food sharing has always been a part of what we do at the Mess Studio. Basically, we are using art and food to build healthy community. So when I saw the opportunity to apply to actually make it more of an organized pantry, I was excited about that because, as you know, the past few years, food prices have just skyrocketed. And largely, our community does need some help in regards to food access. So I applied for the funding to get, number one, a freezer, because sometimes we get our food through the community food redistribution warehouse, Lionhearts. And quite often, we would get so much in a week. And then the next week, because there's so many agencies needing help, we'd get hardly anything, and we were trying to balance out because we run on a pretty tight operating budget. Food is a major part of that. It also allows us to put some shelf-stable things for people during the winter or summer. We have found that we have at least 120 people visit the studio in the 3 days we're open. So 120 people can access and feel more secure about food. And we also really feel that it's important when people access food or any kind of assistance that they become engaged and involved. It just provides a dignity and a value. When people can become involved themselves and have some control over that, I do think it provides a sense of worth. Like when we have people come in, we share lunch every day at the Mess Studio because we feel like if we're expecting people to be creative, wanting to build community, you can't do that on an empty stomach. So we do empower people to come into the kitchen and make our lunches for us. And quite often we'll have retirees that show up and say, you know, I'd like to be a volunteer at the Mess Studio. We don't have volunteers. We are all community members. And those that help out are called active community members. We just feel like that kind of evens out the playing field for everyone. So some of these mostly retirees, and they're on a fixed budget too, they would say, oh, well, I don't want to take a loaf of bread. And I would say it's really important for you to walk through the studio carrying that loaf of bread because we're food sharing together. We're all in this together. And I think that has been a huge aspect of what we do and why we do it.
There seems to be a real emphasis on encouraging the community aspect of this program.
Trying to build community through it. So while we are now officially an open pantry site, the open pantry is within the studio. You actually have to walk through the main studio and come into it. And that is purposeful because we are trying to build relationships with people. Anyone can come in and access that. We are good for that. But we're going to chat with you and, you know, introduce ourselves. We do have a doorbell at the top of the stairs. It has turned out to be a really positive thing because we're in the basement of St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church. So someone comes up, greets you, chats you up. You walk down the stairs and you're not alone walking in. Our numbers have increased. So I think that's indicative.
Can you explain what the pantry looks like?
So we do have a sharing table outside of our kitchen area where there's stuff for that day to be consumed in the studio. And then on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we sort in a room that's off of that. We are still setting up because it is a multi-purpose room for us. It also services a photography group and that. We have a rolling cart with some shelf staple stuff on it this time of year for produce that comes through the Community Food Redistribution Center. They sent out these posters saying, have extra produce, romaine calm. And so we posted that. And now we have had people in the general area, because we're close to like McBurney Park, Skeleton Park area, walk in with bags of romaine lettuce or things to share. And that's just a wonderful way to say to our community, you're doing us a favor by sharing in this abundance, because we don't want any food to go to waste. The other thing is Ryandale has a transitional house on the same property. And so very little goes to waste at our pantry, because Thursday when we close, they either come over and take everything we've got for all of their houses, or we knock on their door and say, food deliveries. With 120 people, that number of people is accessing the food to eat there. Some people are perhaps living rough, so they're not taking food out. I would say our numbers are between 40 and 50 people that actually take home bags of produce, eggs. Sometimes we have coffee. We've purchased oatmeal and we put them in reusable jars with the directions on top. We want to encourage people that we're not using a lot of plastics and we're not making waste. So you sign out a jar. When you bring the jar back, we'll fill it again. It's been a lot of fun. We do see the value of people working together towards a common goal and for their community.
If folks want to take advantage of what you're offering, where can they find information on your hours of operation, how to get there?
Our Facebook page, that's one of the easiest ways. We are the Mess Studio Kingston. That's when we also will post the signs for Pantry Day, Tuesdays and Thursdays. Now, if you came in on a Wednesday and you said to us, I'm low this week or something, we can always adjust. It's good for us to have people come in and walk around the studio and meet some artists. Whether they want to take some of the open pantry items, totally up to them. But I think just seeing what we have to offer through art and food sharing.
And you mentioned you have people bringing items in. Are there items that are consistently in demand? Things that if folks want to donate to you would be particularly appreciated?
Well, during the summer, as I said, we do get access to a lot of fresh produce. Winter and other times, shelf staple items, peanut butter, coffee, tea, things like that. We are trying to keep things on a higher level of nutrition than, say, boxes of Kraft dinner. Generally, the healthier we eat, the healthier we can live, right? So we do talk a bit about that. We have people that have, say, food handling in our kitchen, and we're trying to actually put together teams that come in each day to help kind of facilitate and bring other community members in to help. Because this really only got going for us in May, as I said, we've been doing it unofficially for years. We are still working on that list of actual items, but those are the ones that come to mind.
Our second guest today is Amber Potter, Executive Director of Bloom Skills Center.
I really just wanted an opportunity to chat with some of the organizations that are actually administering this new pantry project in Kingston. Why did your organization want to get involved with this program?
So I think for us, obviously food food insecurity is a big issue, you know, nationally, even globally right now. But when you look at the people most affected by food insecurity, it's the people that often are on the lower income end of the spectrum, often on social supports and things like that. So our population of people living with disability, whether it's intellectual and developmental or physical or whatever application, if there are people that are living on ODSP or any other social supports, the funding is below the poverty level, right? The reality of that is that it makes it really difficult. And so for us, the gardening portion has always been about the education. And so in addition to getting to learn about gardening and things like that, we also develop transferable skills for our students that help them in their everyday life. So following lists, executive functioning, those types of things, they get to learn while doing something fun like gardening, which is really great. And so the produce that we produce is sort of a wonderful outcome, but it's not the point of our program. But it is in a way that when our students get to share it, then it becomes a part of a sense of accomplishment and pride, and it allows better mental health because they get to share their accomplishments, right? And so what better way to do that than to give back to the community and to help support people experiencing food insecurity, knowing especially that that is also our population as well.
There seems to be a common thread of the community connection being almost as important as the food itself is those
100%.
Relationships.
Yeah, because for us, it's also about integration, right? And so it's sort of our philosophy that yes, for people, especially with intellectual and developmental exceptionalities, learning styles may need to be different. It may need to look a different way, but that doesn't mean that we should be excluded from society. In fact, integration is really important for not only our students, but also the community to get to understand different ways of being and different ways of learning and different ways of understanding and understanding that everyone has value and everyone has opportunity to support and share. It just may look differently than what has sort of been profiled for us before.
You have this community garden that you work out of, and it's the Lakeside Community Garden. How does the pantry integrate with that, or what does it look like?
So our gardening program was actually our pilot program for our organization. It was a test pilot just to see if people were interested in learning beyond school and if a real life application was a successful teaching model, all of that stuff. And so we've been gardening at Lakeside for about 5 years. But beyond that, what we were doing with the produce before is educating our students in order to be able to share how to grow it, but then also how to transform it into food. So we have just expanded on that. Now we get to share also that knowledge with community. So beyond our classroom, we were also really close partners with Loving Spoonful. And so some of our students that actually completed our program ended up doing the community training farm when they were running that where we currently are now. And I think that the loss of Loving Spoonful and what they accomplished in the community was a huge loss, especially at a time when food insecurity is really high. We had already been sort of sharing produce through our cooking and through our cafe and things like that. But this just gave us an opportunity to kind of, not completely, because Loving Spoonful did so much in the community, but it gives us an opportunity in one small way to help fill that gap when Lakeside ended up adopting the area that was formerly Loving Spoonful's training farm. Bloom was able to take on one of the hoop houses, which is going to help us prolong our growth throughout the year. We were also able, thanks to KCHC, who acquired a lot of the assets from Loving Spoonful, they gifted us the use of the community market stand that was formerly Loving Spoonfuls right there outside the garden. So our students can be there without being in the direct sun. And it just offers a more secure building that we can kind of keep canned goods and stuff inside. All of those pieces. Loving Spoonful sort of set the prototype, but in some way we are trying to fill that gap a little bit and continue to help our community.
When did you officially launch this component of your program?
Believe it or not, we actually ran a small market last year. So as anything in the business, nonprofit world, government world, things take time, right? And so Loving Spoonful closed 2 years ago. Lakeside had requested that land a while ago, but of course we had to work with the city of Kingston as well as the federal government because it's their property. And it was an election year, so that wasn't their main priority. We have a smaller plot in the lakeside side, which is where we have been gardening the last 5 years. And then we ran a smaller version of the market at St. Andrew's by the Lake Church, kitty corner to where we are now. And that was so successful. Every week, the produce that we had, again, on much smaller scale, because we had less of a space to grow, every week our produce was all gone, all sold out. And we ran that once a week. And again, we ran it in the same way, which is like a donation, pay what you can, or just come and take. Like, we just don't want there to be a stigma around it. And so those that wish to give some, they can give some. Those that don't have the capacity to do that can also just come. And then it all works itself out in the end, which is sort of how we believe community should be. Like I said, we worked with KCHC and the federal government and the city of Kingston to put all these pieces together, and it worked out really well.
And this year, running the pantry, how many days a week are you open, or does it vary from week to week?
Yeah, so ideally, at the current moment, we're open 3 days a week. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday afternoons from 1 to 4. As the growing season gets more mid-swing, so by the end of July, beginning of August, all throughout August, we'll probably add an extra day. It just depends on how much produce we have to share and also how often people are visiting. And then Fridays, something sort of extra special is that we often offer our baked goods, as well as we usually have an outdoor like barbecue or some type of lunch. So far we have done pesto pizzas because we had fresh basil and we made pesto from it. We've done grilled cheese and tomato and basil sandwiches. This coming week we actually are doing refried bean tacos, and the beans were actually harvested from cassie seeds last year, and so we're hoping to have fresh salsa with cilantro from our garden. So each week we try and like also showcase how you can use some of the produce.
Which is always, or can be, a struggle for people too, especially if you're getting the same thing over and over. How do I do something different?
What are some alternatives? Yeah. Especially like when cucumber and zucchini season comes. Or cherry tomatoes, and you're like, how else can I use these? Yeah.
If people want to know, what's the best way? Check your social media.
If people follow Bloom Skills Center, we will post every week when we're open, if any closures need to happen, but we'll also share what we have in the market too. So then people don't have to make a trip out. If kale and radishes aren't your thing, then you know, you don't have to make the trip out, right? Or if there's something that's a limited amount, maybe you do want to hustle and come out and grab some stuff.
And you said it's a pay what you can payment optional.
Yes.
If folks would like to donate items, is that something that you can facilitate as well?
We do. Yeah. People either can bring stuff when we're there. We also, on the side of our market, there is actually like a garden box. And if you open it up, inside there's a cooler that produce can go into. And then there's a black container that you can put canned goods into. And there's a sign right there that tells you where to put each. And we check that every day so that we can put it inside the building and refrigerate it if need be. And that's the idea, is that the city was kind enough to give us a boost, especially with the canned goods. And we also have frozen meals made by Lionhearts. So they gave us a financial boost at the beginning. But now the idea is to hopefully have it be circular, that the community gets to help too. Yeah, that's our hope.
If people aren't familiar with your location, would you mind sharing where you are and what your social media is?
100%. So we are at 670 Front Road, which ends up being the corner of Days and Front Road. There's the big Center 70 building there, the big blue arena. And behind that, you will see a smaller blue portable, which is the neighborhood sharing center. And then the entrance to Lakeside Community Garden. We have the cedar pavilion that is right on the driveway going into the garden. And on the back of our building that faces Front Road, there's a big banner that says Community Market on the back of the building, and that's like about 16 feet long. So hopefully people can see it.
And your social media?
The easiest is either Facebook or Instagram, and it's Bloom Skills Center. And center is the Canadian spelling C-E-N-T-R-E. I really hope that anyone in the community feels welcome to come. So it doesn't need to be just people that are food insecure. I think we could all benefit from having access to local fresh food. It's just nice to be able to come out and support our students as well. Like I said, there's so many lines of benefit for this program. So even if people just want to come out and pick up some fresh salad, even just to come say hi to our students, they would just love to see people. So yeah, it doesn't have to be just for the people that are experiencing food insecurity. It is a community market for the community by the community. Nice to get to share this. So thank you for asking.
That wraps up your headlines for this evening. Next up is Jesse Bell with your CFRC Sports Desk.
This is part one of the OUA football season preview brought to you by CFRC Power Plays. We begin our season preview with last year's 11th place team, the University of Toronto Varsity Blues. 2025 was a roller coaster year for the program, who came out of the gates hot with a record-setting passing offense led by quarterback Scott Barnett and all-Canadian wide receiver Chris Joseph. Barnett threw for over 600 yards and 4 touchdowns. 300 of those 600 yards went to Chris Joseph himself, en route to a 42-23 season-opening victory over the Carleton Ravens. Toronto would drop back-to-back overtime thrillers to York and Waterloo before losing to the Gales at Varsity Stadium by a scoreline of 44-6. And trust me, folks, I was there that day. It could have been a lot worse than that. The Gales defense generated 5 interceptions, completely flummoxing this explosive passing offense. That game brought the Blues plummeting back down to earth, as they would lose their next 3 games in convincing fashion. They did nearly play spoiler for the Ottawa GGs, taking them to their limit in the regular season finale, but that's as close as Toronto would come to a win after week 1. Let's take a look at their 2025 stats. Out of 11 teams, they were 10th in points for with 170, 10th in points per game with 21.3, 8th in total yards with 3,100. They were 6th in passing yards with 2,446, and they were 9th in rushing yards with 832, which works out to about 104 yards per game. Defensively, they finished 8th in points allowed with 277, giving up about 34.6 points per game. They were 7th in yards allowed per game with 451. They were 8th in their pass defense, giving up 308 yards per game. But impressively, they were 4th overall in the conference in rush yards allowed per game at just 142.9. Their linebacking core was really stout. I think they did a great job against the run. But unfortunately, the porous pass defense did cost them in the long run. Toronto finished the season with a point differential of minus 107, which was 9th in the conference. Over their last 5 seasons, here is their record. They finished 3-3 in 2021, 4-4 in 2022, 2-6 in 2023, and they had back-to-back 1-7 seasons in 2024 and 2025. We've talked about the past, let's talk about the near future for the Blues. Admittedly, it has been a steady decline for the program after back-to-back playoff appearances, but it's not all doom and gloom. They have a stronger talent pool than their poor record would indicate. They've got all-Canadian wide receiver Chris Joseph back after his incredible 2025. They're also going to return a number of key players on a strong offensive line, and of course, some solid options at linebacker. They are losing Jake Osine to graduation, who was the dynamic part of that 1-2 punch with Chris Joseph. And from what my sources tell me, Scott Barnett may not be their starting quarterback next year, even if he is back. There is an apparent quarterback controversy brewing in Toronto, and from what I've heard, Caleb Donahue is rumored to be the favorite to start week 1. The Blues have a tough schedule in 2026 as they kick things off in week 1 versus the defending Yates Cup champion Queens Gales. After that, they have tough matchups with Ottawa on the road, Western at home, Windsor on the road, Guelph at home, McMaster on the road, then games against York at home, and they close things out at Carleton. That is 6 straight playoff teams on the schedule for the Blues, a grueling gauntlet for a program that has struggled with health and consistency. And I'll be honest, I don't have the Blues favored in any of those games, and I am predicting an 0-8 record in 2026. I do think they will finish last in the conference. I do think they'll be competitive in most of their games. But I can't see this squad overcoming anybody with how they are currently laid out. And I hate saying that because I love the Toronto Varsity Blues. I think they're a fantastic historic program. But I do think a shakeup is needed in Toronto, and this season will be the impetus for that. This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Wednesday, July 15th. 30 degrees is your high with a 30% chance of showers, mix of sun and cloud. A little bit cooler overnight. That rain will cool things off down to 17. Thursday, July 16th, 28 degrees with a 30% chance of showers, dropping down to 14 overnight, coldest night of the week so far. Friday, July 17th, 28 degrees with a 30% chance of showers in the forecast, dropping down to around that 15 degree mark overnight. Moving into the weekend, Saturday, July 18th, 26 is your high with a 65% chance of rain in the forecast. Sunday, July 19th, 23 is your high with a 90% chance of precipitation, looking quite heavy at that. And then starting off next week, Monday, July 20th, daytime high of 23 with a 70% chance of rain throughout the day. This is your City of Kingston traffic report. Cranbrook Street from Lakeview Avenue to Days Road is closed for pedestrian improvements. Baggett Street from Barrie to West Street is closed for the Eastern Canadian Little League Championship. Bath Road from Sir John A to Portsmouth Avenue, expect delays for the installation of intersection pedestrian signals. The city is installing intersection pedestrian signals at several locations to make it easier and safer for pedestrians to cross busy roads. Wright Crescent at Palace Road to Palace Road is closed for a contractor to complete roadway repairs, pedestrian safety and access improvements, and traffic calming features on Wright Crescent. Norman Rogers Drive from Sir John A. McDonald Boulevard to Van Order Drive started on June 15th. Norman Rogers Drive is closed to through traffic to facilitate roadway rehabilitation and configuration improvements. This work will improve road condition, accessibility, and safety for all road users, including students, families, and local residents. Reminder that the City of Kingston and Utilities Kingston are in the midst of a reconstruction of Princess Street. This major infrastructure project includes upgrades to underground and above ground utilities, as well as improvements to enhance safety and comfort for pedestrians and cyclists. Barrie Street to Queen Street is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street, and Aberdeen Street from Johnson to William is still closed to accommodate construction activity and staging.
I'm CFRC's Community News and Arts Coordinator, Jenny, and this is your weekly events and concerts calendar brought to you by Flying V Productions. Whether you're looking for live music, community events, workshops, markets, or family-friendly activities, there is plenty of happening in Kingston this week, so let's get into it. Wednesday offers plenty to explore, beginning with Live at the Library featuring Pete Moss and music makers at Calvin Park Library. In the evening, Games in the Square return downtown while Swingin' Summer Concert Series continues at City Hall Amphitheater. Music fans can also catch Taryn McKenna at the Belvedere Hotel, Natalie Cran at the Bank Gastro Bar, Sean McCullen at the Cove Inn, and Petunia and the Vipers at Hotel Wolf Island. Thursdays feature the Kingston Public Market, Stories in the Square at City Hall Amphitheater, and Queen's Family Night at Elbow Lake, where families can enjoy an evening of wild watercolors. Later on, Movies in the Square returns with a free screening of Guardians of the Galaxy. Live music includes Adam Karch at the Cove Inn, Wayne Riley at the Helm Dockside Patio, Painted Moons, and Quentin Cottrey at the Hotel Wolf Island, and Tara McKenna at Bar Petunia. Friday is packed with live entertainment. Kicking It Country returns to the City Hall Amphitheater, while the Analog Island Music Festival kicks off at Hotel Wolf Island for the weekend. Other highlights include the LaSalle Causeway Spring Band as part of the Waterfront Concert Series, Off the Rocks Great Big Sea Tribute at the Sphere, Young Petty Stones at the Cove Inn, Whiskey Smoke at the RCHA Club, Squid Pistol at the Toucan, and the Oreos at the Merchant Tap House. Heading into Saturday, you can browse the Kingston Public Market, the Mini Market Series, and the Skilla Festival, or check out Chef Demos at the City Hall Amphitheater, and Saturday sessions in Confederation Park. The Analog Island Music Festival continues on Wolf Island, while music fans can also catch Rock for the Rydale at the Sphere. The Red Handed, as part of the Waterfront Concert Series, Hag and the Diaries at the Broom Factory, Sittin' Ducks at the Turnanog. Wrapping up things on Sunday, the Memorial Center Farmers Market returns from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. alongside yoga in Battery Park and the Kingston Pop Choir's performance of Sure Thing at the Tet Center. The final day of the Analog Island Music Festival continues at Wolf Island, and music includes Taryn McKenna at Parsons Brewing Company, Head Over Heels at the Cove Inn, and live band karaoke with the Oreos at the Merchant Tap House. This has been your weekly events concerts calendar for July 13th through the 19th. For more information on any of these events, visit the CFRC website and keep it locked right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. The events calendar is brought to you by Flying V Productions, bringing live theater, comedy, and unforgettable entertainment to audiences across Kingston. Be sure to check out their upcoming shows and events throughout the season. I'm Jenny. Thanks for listening and have a great week, Kingston!
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and listen on the go, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and for our podcast, Smith Engineering at Queen's University. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.